morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, July 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga says anti-government protests will continue.
The most important discussion in our country today is the high taxes, rising cost of living, and the ensuing protests. Although the tax protests had been initiated by Azimio, it has since gone beyond the party.
Tensions between Sudan and Kenya's President Ruto impede IGAD mediation efforts in Sudan. The U.S. donates over 40 metric tons of emergency food assistance to those fleeing conflict in Sudan. The World Food Program cuts back on food assistance for refugees in Malawi. A Nigerian opposition party calls for a probe of a foiled attack on a candidate.
We are sure that they are stuck. We are sure that they are frustrated by the trove of evidence we have before the court. But the only thing they have on their plate right now is to see how they can attack the life of Atiku Abubakar.
And as Liberia celebrates 176th independence anniversary today, Wednesday, there is a petition for the United States to grant visa waivers to all Liberians. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga says a wave of protests against high taxes and the rising cost of living will continue. While he did not say when the protests will resume, Odinga accused the government of using brutality against protesters and said officials are not willing to sit down and negotiate a way out of the crisis. VOA's Nairobi bureau chief Mariama Diallo was there and has this report.
Addressing the international media on Tuesday in Nairobi, Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga said ongoing protests against what he called excessive taxation and the rising cost of living will not stop. He says the issue is no longer a party issue, but a Kenyan issue.
The most important discussion in our country today is the high taxes, rising cost of living, and the ensuing protests. Although the tax protests had been initiated by Azimio, it has since gone beyond the party. After the passage of the Finance Act, Kenyans have defied party, political and regional divides and united to resist punitive taxation and demand the lowering of the cost of basic commodities.
The Azimio La Umoja One Kenya Alliance leader said he didn't anticipate the treatment people received from the police, noting that violence should never be used to disperse protests.
Unprecedented horrors of police brutality against the protesters. With the constitutional guarantee for protests, we never imagined that police would outlaw protests, confront protesters, and kill so many, as is the case now.
In a statement on Tuesday, the Interior Ministry said that 305 law enforcement officers have been injured and one has died while protecting lives and property. And more than 850 businesses were broken into and looted. Last week, Human Rights Watch accused Kenyan government officials of using hostile rhetoric against protesters and asked Kenyan officials to respect the demonstrators' rights to assembly and to peaceful protests. Between March and May, the organization says it has documented 16 people killed, either shot or beaten by police. Collins Orono, a child's rights activist, says what's happening is unfortunate.
This time round is actually gone too far, because to an extent where, you know, tear gas can be lobbed in schools and you know, in people's houses, and people can be dragged from their houses and all that. That tells you that, you know, the cops and the government have actually boldened enough to continue doing this.
But Orono also put blame on both sides.
I think it all starts with our leaders recognizing that, you know, the nation is bigger than them. Our politicians recognizing them that, you know, we have over 50 million Kenyans and the politicians are very few. So I think we've really given a lot of power. We've given a lot of power to the political class, to the point that they can do whatever they want at all cost, whether we are losing lives or not, whether children are being tear gassed or not. They don't care.
The Azimio Political Alliance says about 50 people have been killed since the protest started in March, but official numbers bring it down to about 20 people. Police insist the protests are illegal and arrested 300 demonstrators last week. Odinga says he doesn't want to be part of this government, but the government is not serious about negotiating a solution. He said there's even been outside intervention recently to mediate the crisis.
The president from Tanzania came here 2 weeks ago at the invitation of President Ruto to mediate, and she was kept waiting, not from our side. We were available, but the other side was not available. She spent 2 nights here, and it was all in vain.
He also says other people have tried, and President William Ruto is the one who's resisting. Odinga said he called off tomorrow's planned demonstrations to pray for those who died and were injured during the protests. He didn't say when the protest will resume. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Analysts say its spat between Sudan and Kenya is hurting regional efforts to mediate an end to the war in Sudan. This week, a Sudanese general accused Kenyan President William Ruto of favoring the paramilitary forces battling the Sudanese army after he suggested deploying East African peacekeeping troops to Sudan. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba, South Sudan.
Anwar Ibrahim Ahmed, an Ethiopian political analyst who monitors the Horn of Africa region, says a recent uptick in tensions between Sudanese army leaders and the Kenyan government could hinder efforts to restore peace and stability in Sudan. He adds that members of the East African bloc, IGAD, will have to consider a grievance raised by Sudan over Kenyan President William Ruto. Ruto leads an IGAD subcommittee called the Quartet Group, tasked with mediating an end to Sudan's 3.5-month-old war. Sudan's government has repeatedly accused Ruto of having business ties with the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. Ruto denies the allegations. However, Sudanese leaders have refused to cooperate with the Quartet Group until he is replaced. Ibrahim says IGAD is supposed to have a speedy response to Sudan's rejection of Ruto's role as head of the Quartet Group. On July 10th, the Ruto-led Quartet Group proposed deploying a regional coalition of peacekeeping troops in Sudan to protect civilians and secure humanitarian corridors. Sudanese army leaders rejected the move as an invasion. Addressing the Sudanese Engineering Corps over the weekend in Omdurman, Lieutenant General Yasser Alata, Assistant Commander-in-Chief of the Sudan Armed Forces, criticized Ruto for interfering with Sudanese internal affairs. He says the Sudanese army is capable of defending its own country and routing what he described as armed mercenaries. Alata challenged Ruto to face the Sudanese army. Alata says President Ruto should leave East African Reserve Forces alone, and instead he should come along with the Kenyan army to face us. On Monday, Kenyan Foreign Minister Alfred Mutua responded cautiously to the remarks which were reported by the TRT Africa channel, saying that Kenya has yet to get the full context of what General Alata said. Mutua indicated that the government cannot rely on information shared through social media to respond to an issue with diplomatic implications. Zuhair Janda, a member of Kenya's national parliament, condemned Alata's statement. In a video shared on social media and seen by VOA, Janda said Ruto's intention is to ensure that peace prevails in Sudan and people have access to aid.
Our business with Sudan is not about who leads Sudan. Our business is to ensure the humanitarian corridor is open so that the people in Sudan should not die. They should be given food. They should be given medicine.
The United Nations said more than 3 million people have been displaced due to the conflict in Sudan, both internally and across the border into neighboring countries. Michael Atit for VOA News, Juba, South Sudan.
The U.S. Agency for International Development on Tuesday donated an emergency supply of high-energy biscuits to the United Nations World Food Program. They will be used to feed people seeking safety in South Sudan after fleeing the ongoing conflict in Sudan. The 40.5 metric tons of biscuits will also be made available to those arriving at reception centers in various locations across the country. Demo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Michael J. Adler, the U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, says the high-energy biscuits will enable WFP to respond to humanitarian emergency as the conflict in Sudan continues to drive thousands of refugees into South Sudan.
The commodities we're receiving today constitute just a fraction of the additional resources the U.S. government is providing in South Sudan alone to help refugees and returnees fleeing the conflict in Sudan. Our total assistance thus far is over $30 million, which in itself is but a fraction of the around $1 billion of assistance we provide to help people in South Sudan.
As the conflict in Sudan enters 100 days, WFP says it continues to receive nearly 2,000 returnees and refugees entering South Sudan daily. Mary Ellen McGroty, the WFP country director in South Sudan, says so far 190,000 refugees and returnees have entered South Sudan, adding that a majority of the people seeking safety are returning South Sudanese. She says South Sudan faces other underlying challenges, including recent flooding and food insecurity, which have worsened the situation.
Because it is a country where 9.4 million people are in some need of some form of humanitarian assistance, and over 7.4 million people in what we classify as severe food insecurity, really driven by the combined shocks of the conflict that still continues in South Sudan, the climate change that the many communities across South Sudan, whether it be the floods of 4 years, unprecedented flooding, the drought that they're also seeing as they abut the Horn of Africa, and all that coming together and really making things extremely difficult for the people of South Sudan.
McGroty says the biscuit will help WFP in responding to the needs of new arrivals at the border points.
As we said, the people coming back, the South Sudanese that are returning, they're a population on the move. They're coming in at places like Renk and Awil, and they need to get onwards home. So the biscuits are really going to help us give them a little bit of support on that journey home as we try to roll out food and nutrition assistance both at the border and in their places of return.
The 40.5 metric tons of high-energy biscuit will be distributed to some 45,000 South Sudanese returnees and refugees fleeing the conflict in Sudan. The USAID and WFP did not provide a specific dollar value for this in-kind contribution of high-energy biscuits. The contribution is part of the $11.5 million allocated by the United States to WFP in South Sudan for food, nutrition assistance, and support to logistics services. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, July 26. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. VOA's English to Africa service celebrates its 60th anniversary on August 4th. Help us celebrate by sharing your thoughts on our programs. Send a voice message or a text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076. Once again, +1 202 258 3076. Tell us what your favorite program is, or let us know about a particular news story that you connected with. Recall a favorite memory about VOA Africa and tell us what stories you think we should cover or how we can improve. Once again, the WhatsApp number is +1 202 258 3076. And we thank you for 60 years of support. The World Food Program in Malawi says a funding shortfall has forced it to cut by one half food rations for more than 50,000 people at the country's only refugee camp. The drop in food aid comes as Malawi's government is relocating back to the camp refugees who had been living outside of it. Refugees say overcrowding and dwindling support are pushing many to leave the site. Lamek Mansina reports from Blantyre.
The food cuts comes at a time when refugees at the Dzaleka camp are complaining of inadequate food assistance. a situation that has forced some of the refugees to voluntarily return home. Earlier this month, 38 refugees from Burundi returned home, and the UNHCR says plans were underway to repatriate another group of more than 50 refugees. Many of the refugees cited the food shortage situation as another reason for the return. Simon Denier is the acting director for the WFP in Malawi. He told VOA via a messaging app that the shortfall is largely because of a number of factors, including the high cost of food, both locally and globally.
The conflict in Ukraine, the enforcement of encampment policy by Malawi government, and rising numbers of refugees worldwide. Mobilizing resources is increasingly becoming a challenge.
Dzaleka is a home of upward of 50,000 refugees, mainly from the Democratic Republic of Congo, Burundi, Rwanda, Ethiopia, and Somalia. The WFP provides monthly cash assistance at the camp, where the refugees face several challenges, including insufficient shelter and inadequate health, water, and sanitation services. The agency says the assistance provided was designed to meet the minimum recommended energy needs of 2,100 kilocalories. However, it says the food cuts mean the refugees will now be receiving a monthly cash allowance of $5.90 per person. Nibigira Goreth is a refugee from Burundi and a community leader at the Dzaleka refugee camp. She told VOA the food cut likely will force many vulnerable women and girls into prostitution and men into theft to earn a living.
Just imagine to have 5,000 per month. How can you have all what you need to eat within a month? It's a small amount of money. It will impact to refugees. Some of them may go in the prostitution, and the others may go to this kind of fees.
The food cuts come as the government continues to relocate refugees who were staying in areas outside the camp. The government says the relocation exercise, which started in June, is in line with its encampment policy, which restricts the refugees to living and operating within camp premises. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, is calling for an investigation after security forces arrested two alleged Boko Haram militants for plotting to attack the party's presidential candidate, Atiku Abubakar. The arrest on Sunday came amid continued court battles over the outcome of Nigeria's February presidential election. The PDP alleges that the ruling All Progressive Congress APC party won through election fraud, which it denies. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The opposition People's Democratic Party said Monday it believes attackers were plotting to kill the party's presidential candidate, Atiku Abubakar, in his home, slay innocent citizens, and cause chaos. The PDP also alleged that the arrests might be connected to the ruling party's recent warning to the judiciary. The ruling All Progressives Congress last week urged the judiciary to be careful with the ruling on the February election, saying a wrong decision could unleash anarchy in Nigeria. The PDP says the ruling party was trying to start violence as an excuse to impose emergency rule in Nigeria. On Sunday, Adamawa State Police operatives arrested two men inside Abubakar's residence. Police say the men admitted to being members of Islamist extremist group Boko Haram on a mission to bomb the place. The police have handed the suspects over to the military for more investigation. Frank Shuaibu is Atiku Abubakar's spokesperson. He says Abubakar is a target because the PDP has presented a strong case in court against the February election results.
We don't see it as a coincidence. We do not need the services of a clairvoyant to hazard a guess as to what is happening. We are sure that they are stuck. We are sure that they are frustrated by the trove of evidence we have before the courts. But the only thing they have on their plates right now is to see how they can attack the life of Atiku Abubakar.
The PDP and the Labour Party have been challenging the election that put the ruling party's Bola Tinubu in the president's office. The PDP accuses the APC of manipulating the election process to retain power and is calling for security reinforcements around Abubakar. But the ruling party dismissed the claims. The APC's National Publicity Secretary, Felix Morka, says the PDP is making baseless accusations.
Very unfortunate, but the People's Democratic Party would trivialize something as serious as suspected terror attack to politicize an incident that is still at the very early stages of investigation. I think it just shows the depth to which the PDP has descended in its utter confusion and loss.
Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Today, July 26, is the 176th independence anniversary of Liberia. According to history, Liberia was founded by the American Colonization Society as a home for free slaves. Reverend Tuale Crowd is founder of the Universal Human Rights International and the Free Liberia Movement in Boston, Massachusetts. He is the sponsor of the petition for the United States to grant visa waivers for Liberians to gain access to education, employment, and business opportunities. Reverend Crowell tells me that visa waivers would mitigate the harm done by American colonization.
From the time I was young, we've been told Liberia did not have any colonial power. It was not colonized by any country. Well, from the research, we found out that, in fact, Liberia was created by the government of the United States of America and not the American Colonization Society. It was created with two acts of the United States Congress, with American taxes and the force of the United States Navy. And so the United States of America owes all Liberians a duty of care and protection under the international law of occupation. That's number one. And number two, the 1824 Constitution of Liberia was approved in Washington, D.C., Article 1 says those born in Liberia and those who left the United States to move to Liberia were entitled to all privileges enjoyed by citizens of the United States.
Reverend Crow, let's assume that your petition is successful, that every Liberian who wants to come to the United States is granted visa. Is this reasonable?
It's more than reasonable. We are not saying they should be granted. We're saying they should be waived.
Okay.
It's happening right now. There are 516 sovereign nations, sovereign Native American nations in the United States that have access to every opportunity of American citizens without visa. Number two, territories under American control. People who are born there come to the United States and they have access to all privileges without visa restrictions. So what we're saying is Liberia ought to have the same because it was created by the United States government for three reasons. Number one, to fulfill American domestic and foreign policy objectives. And those who created Liberia at the time created Liberia not for the purpose of democracy, but to protect, to empower and enrich the politicians.
Although, let me ask you, because the history, there are those who would say, well, Liberia was never colonized.
A few weeks ago, His Excellency Ambassador Michael McCarthy said, after touring the whole country, he said this country is corrupt and the corruption is not limited to one political party or one administration. He went further to say that the corruption in Liberia is over 200 years old. Now, those who say Liberia was not colonized, Liberia is only 176 years old. If the corruption is over 200 years old, it has to go beyond Liberia to the American Colonization Society, which was not incorporated until 1831 and 1837.
So, Reverend Crowell, today, Wednesday, is Liberia's 176th independence anniversary. What are your hopes and aspirations for Liberia?
My hope and aspiration for Liberia is that we will have visa waiver. Liberians will be allowed to come to the United States for quality education, employment, and business opportunities. And by so doing, they will be able to utilize their God-given potential.
Reverend Tuale Crowell is founder of the Universal Human Rights International and the Free Liberia Movement of Boston, Massachusetts. He was speaking with me from Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. And that's it for this Wednesday, July 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Butte, Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.